At just before 5, he gathers up the suit and walks it down to the dry cleaners, the flash drive tucked into his right front pocket. He fills out the paperwork. That's one of the things he can't get over, the amount of paperwork it takes to do anything. And walks down another block to a place that makes good smoothies. It's too early to go to the tower yet, so Steve kills time at the smoothie bar and pokes his head into some of the little shops along the street that lead in the right direction. At 5 minutes to 6, Steve turns his attention to the most direct path to the tower. He's only been walking for about a minute when his phone chirps in his back pocket. He has learned how to text, though he hasn't actually done it much, and recognizes the sound as an incoming text message.
"Will be late. I am related. Let yourself in. Don't go exploring."
Steve locks his phone and slides it back into his pocket. His shoulders are tight at the idea that Tony's doing something Iron Man related, which means possibly something dangerous, and that he's out there doing it alone. Not that he can't take care of himself. Iron Man is always alone. But that Steve might be able to help if Tony knew everything. "I'll tell him," Steve thinks firmly, as though giving himself an order, and continues to walk toward the tower, his stomach a knot. The front door is locked. Steve, experimentally, says, "Jarvis?" The door clicks open.
"Welcome, Captain Rogers," Jarvis says as Steve lets himself inside. "Please make use of Mr. Stark's private elevator. It is now keyed to your voice print and no longer requires an access card."
Steve blinks, but says, "Thank you, Jarvis."
"You're entirely welcome, Captain Rogers," Jarvis says, and sounds sincere.
His voice moves with Steve as he walks. Steve looks around, but doesn't see any speakers.
"Mr. Stark apologizes for his tardiness and asks that you make yourself comfortable in the penthouse. Do you require food or drink to be delivered?"
"No, Jarvis. I ate before I came, thanks. Tony doesn't keep anything to drink up there?"
"Several varieties of alcohol, coffee, and several types of tea are available to you, Captain,"
Jarvis tells him.
"If you require anything further, I am capable of having it delivered to you."
"Thanks, but I'm okay for now," Steve says. He confronts the elevator and pushes the up button. A red glow lights the button, and Steve tries, "Captain Steve Rogers," which is apparently adequate. The doors open, and Steve steps inside. There isn't a button labeled penthouse, and he's pretty sure the 85th floor, the one that is comprised of Tony's offices, isn't actually the top of the tower. He ponders for a moment and then says, "Penthouse," and the elevator jerks gently into motion. Steve is silent for a few long moments and then asks, "Jarvis?"
"Yes, Captain?"
"Do you know what Iron Man is doing?" He isn't sure if he should ask, and is even less sure that Jarvis will tell him, but he's kind of glad to be wrong.
"There is a fire on the 58th floor of the Zenith building. It is so far contained to that floor, but there are several employees trapped inside. The fire itself is under the control of the NYFD, but they requested Iron Man's assistance in rescuing the people for the sake of expediency."
Jarvis pauses.
"I assure you, Mr. Stark is quite safe. He often assists the fire and police departments in situations in which speed is essential."
Steve's belly unknots a little. "Thanks, Jarvis." The elevator stops, and Steve steps out into the open, airy living space of the penthouse. Jarvis raises the lights enough that Steve can look around, but Steve is mindful of Tony's instructions not to go exploring. He looks over the spacious living area, which is bordered by a low bar, behind which a smallish kitchen is nestled. On the wall perpendicular to that, which isn't quite right, because the penthouse isn't actually a square room. It's an indefinite shape, but it's closer to an octagon than anything else. It's an actual bar. The glass or crystal decanters on the wall behind it, coming in all shapes and sizes. Steve ponders a drink, decides he'd rather have tea, which will give him the advantage of having something to do with his hands while he waits, and asks Jarvis, "Is the kitchen out of bounds for me?"
"No, Captain," Jarvis says. "Mr. Stark specified that you were to be allowed access to the entire penthouse, with the exception of the instructions that he'd already relayed to you."
Steve thinks about that, decides that the kitchen doesn't count as exploring, since he can see it from the front door, and it's not an enclosed room itself. Jarvis directs him to the cupboard with the tea and coffee in it, and Steve fills the kettle and sets it to boil. With only minimal directions from Jarvis, it's his first time with an electric stove, and this one doesn't even have any markings on the top to tell Steve where to put his kettle. A few minutes later, Steve is drinking spearmint tea and sitting in the living area, arranged so that he can see the platform that Iron Man will land on when he returns. Which he does, and much sooner than Steve expects. The suit is breathtaking. Steve stands and closes the distance between the seat and the window closest to the landing pad to get a good look. When his phone rings, he answers it without looking to see who's calling. He knows who's calling.
"This enough?"
Tony says, spreading his arms and turning slowly enough that Steve gets a good look at the whole suit. He isn't surprised that Tony remembers it being on the list. Steve says. "Can I come out and see you in the air?" There's a click a few feet away, and Steve sees that one of the windows has swung inward. Steve puts his tee down on the first available flat surface and slips outside. The wind is forceful and a little on the brisk side this high up, but Steve barely notices. Tony waits until Steve is almost on the platform before he takes off, thrusters orange, repulsors glowing white, the arc reactor a blue glow from his chest. He hovers in the air for 4 or 5 seconds, and then gracefully arcs into a spiral that Steve follows with his eyes, enchanted. Tony dips and glides for a minute, and then two, and Steve finally says, "It's gorgeous. I could tell from the pictures, but seeing it like this?" He can't find a way to describe it that doesn't sound silly in his own head, and his erection seems both ridiculous and totally proportionate to the experience at the same time. "I wish you could," he says, and then stops before the rest of that sentence can escape, hoping the cool wind will conceal his heated cheeks. Yes, he wishes Tony could fuck him in the suit, but it seems wrong to slot such an amazing feat of skill and perseverance into something frivolous in his mind.
"You do, huh?"
Tony's voice murmurs in his ear, and he swoops his way back to the platform, landing lightly on it. The blue glow of the faceplate's eyes are firmly pointed in Steve's direction.
"Rain check?"
Tony asks.
"I can make that happen, but it'll take me a couple of days."
Steve's face blazes with heat. He stammers something out that probably doesn't make much sense.
"Don't be ridiculous," Tony says. "What's the point of being a genius if I can't use my creations to make you look like that?"
Steve doesn't know what he looks like, but he can't help but shiver at the idea. "Really?" he says plaintively, and is faintly humiliated at how hopeful it sounds.
"I never joke about the suit,"
Tony says, a little flatly. "No, I..." Steve says. "You don't... It's just that..."
"It's just that it's gorgeous, and you have excellent taste,"
Tony says, sounding amused now.
"Give me 2 days, and I'll blow your mind, Captain."
"Yeah," Steve breathes. "If you... Okay, Tony.
Go inside,
Tony says.
You're standing where I need to be to get out of the suit.
Steve's phone beeps at the disconnected call, and Steve backs away as Tony steps forward and keeps backing away so he can watch as Tony walks, each step accompanied by the flurry of metallic arms removing the armor piece by piece. Tony walks through the open glass pane, and it clicks closed behind him. He's wearing black jeans and a worn dark gray t-shirt, and he looks amazing, his hair a little mussed from the helmet, in a way that makes Steve's hands twitch to smooth it back. I should have asked to touch it, Steve says, without intent, the idea crossing his mind and falling out of his mouth between one breath and the next. Tony cocks his head a little, his eyes roving across Steve's chest and down to his groin. When you put it on the list, did you know it was a sex thing? He asked curiously. Steve shakes his head. You know the whole list is about sex, don't you? Tony asks, crossing the distance between them and raising one hand to press it against Steve's chest. Steve starts to protest, pauses while he mentally reviews the list, and then shrugs. I didn't, but I don't think you're wrong, he says finally. Tony is close enough that for the first time, Steve really notices how much bigger he is. He's at least 5 or 6 inches taller, and so much wider in the shoulder that Tony could probably spend a New York summer day comfortably sheltered against the sun by standing in Steve's shadow. He doesn't know why that makes his cock throb in his jeans. And even though he's looking up at Steve intently, Steve wonders if Tony really feels how much bigger Steve is. Tony acts like he's 7 feet tall and has so much life and energy that it's never occurred to Steve to think otherwise. Tony flips his hand over Steve's chest and smacks him gently. Come on, he says. I can't do anything about your suit-fucking fetish, but the touching I can manage. Wait, Steve says, though he's already following Tony when he says it, because following Tony seems automatic. Tony pauses and turns. I'll wait. I mean, he mumbles, until you can. Tony arches both brows, but he's smirking just a little. Going to let it be a tease? He asks, but kind of fondly, and his smile widens when Steve just nods and blushes. Fair enough, Tony says. Steve digs in his pocket for the flash drive. Tony takes it, sighs a little, and shoves it in his pocket. I meant for them to send them electronically, so you wouldn't have to ferry them back and forth, he says. I think, Steve says slowly, taking a deep breath, that Director Fury is deliberately giving me something to ferry back and forth, something that I can use to explain my presence. Tony frowns. And why would he do that? Because he knows I'm sleeping with you, Steve admits. He called me in to talk about your apparently shocking and abrupt cooperation. And you thought it would be a good idea to tell him? Tony asks, though he sounds more interested than angry. Off the record, Steve says. And yes, he actually did turn off his office surveillance when we talked about it. But yes, I'm pretty sure I couldn't have given him another excuse that would have made sense to him. So I told him the truth. All of the truth? Tony asks, smirking. No, Steve blushes, but enough to explain things. And enough to make sure he won't even consider replacing you, Tony says. That's actually probably the best thing you could have done, honestly. I wouldn't have worked with anyone else, anyway. I should have had permission from you to disclose it, Steve says. I'm sorry about that. Tony snorts. If it had been anyone other than you, Fury probably would have already deduced the situation himself. It's not like he doesn't know my reputation. He shrugs easily. Besides, I'm not ashamed of you. You're a catch. Steve chuckles. Likewise, he says honestly. But I think Fury would rather have it kept under wraps. Of course he would, Tony says, carelessly. He's a spy. He wants to keep everything under wraps. Almost certainly including anything that might damage your career or reputation. He throws a smirk in Steve's direction. Seriously, don't worry about it. I can't tell you how much I don't care what Fury knows about my sex life. Okay, Steve agrees, because he's as close to certain as he can be that Tony really doesn't care. So, the new friend I made you, Tony says, his smile going a little sharp. You felt violated? Steve shivers a little, but just says, Yes. If you hadn't called. Much worse? Tony asks. Yes, Steve says, a little hoarsely. Will you use it again? Yes, Steve admits. Tony's smile is like a shark's. Good, he says, sounding both wicked and satisfied. Come this way. Tony turns slightly and leads Steve down a short corridor. Lights flicker on as they advance, dim, but enough to see by. There are only three doors, one on either side of the hall, not directly facing each other, and one at the end of the hall. The doors on the side are made of what looks like oak to Steve. The one at the end of the hall looks like steel, and has a glowing blue keypad inset into the wall next to it. Tony stops in front of the door to the right. What's that one? Steve asks, pointing. My workshop, Tony says. It's actually down a floor. Well, it's actually its own floor, but you can't get to it from anywhere but here or my private elevator. He opens the door he's standing in front of. I'll take you down and give you the tour later. He jerks his chin in the direction of the room he's standing in front of. Trust me, Captain. This is what you're here to see. The lights come up as Tony steps inside, still relatively dimly, but Steve's vision is very good. It's a large bedroom with an equally large bed. There are several doors inside, all of them closed, and there isn't a single stick of furniture in the room, except for the bed itself, which is a four-poster wrought iron monstrosity, complete with antiquated curtains. Steve is curious about it, but he also has suspicions about it. You don't sleep here, he says. Tony looks over his shoulder at Steve and grins. I don't, he agrees easily. How did you know? That bed is a prop, a showpiece. You sleep in something more modern, and something that definitely doesn't have curtains. And there's nothing in this room. Not that you couldn't have a whole host of furniture behind any of these doors, but I don't really think you do. I sleep across the hall, Tony says, giving Steve a speculative look. All of my clothes live here, but I don't sleep here. I like my bed a little softer. Why have this room at all? Steve asks. This bed is ideal for sex. Firmer is better. You don't sleep with people in your real bed, Steve says, some kind of slow understanding dragging upward from the back of his mind. You don't sleep with people. Tony's eyes are a little narrow, but he doesn't actually sound upset or angry when he says, No. I don't. Why? Steve asks, even though he suspects he already knows why, and doesn't really like it. Tony shakes his head. Security, at least partly. That and the way that people go to bed knowing I'm Tony Stark, wake up next to me, and expect me to be somehow different. Huh, Steve says, because that is kind of what he thought, but not exactly. It hadn't occurred to him that Tony might feel pressured by waking up next to someone. He'd expected it to be more about drawing firm boundaries. Tony shrugs, looking a little self-conscious. "Yeah," he says, and walks across the room. "We might end up here, but this isn't actually what I wanted to show you." Steve follows, his eyes still on the really ridiculously enormous bed. "What in the world do you need with a bed this big?" he asks. Tony stops next to one of the doors in the bedroom and smirks. "Orgies," he says succinctly. "Huh," Steve says again, unsure what he thinks of that. "You've actually done that?" "Many, many times," Tony says. "Why, do you want to?" Heat blooms in Steve's face. "No, I mean, it's just not for me." "How would you know?" Tony points out, but his grin is friendly. "You might find out orgies are what have been missing from your life. It wouldn't be the first time something took you by surprise." "Stage fright," Steve says, knowing it sounds ridiculous. "The idea of an orgy gives me stage fright. Pretty sure that's not what I'm after." "The idea of anyone as gorgeous as you having stage fright is frankly ridiculous," Tony says, but he presses a hand along Steve's lower back, fingertips dipping slightly beneath the waist of his jeans. "Come on, this is either going to scare you to death or fascinate you deeply." "You're not sure which?" Steve asks. "Nope," Tony says. "Not a mind reader. I only know as much about your kinky desires as you do at this point." Steve blushes, and Tony laughs. "Don't worry. If you don't want anything to do with it, there are a lot of other options." His thumb sweeps a warm fan across Steve's spine. He opens the door into a much brighter room, this one twice as big as the bedroom, and filled with such a discordant panorama of objects that Steve's gaze can't seem to light on any one thing. Nothing seems to be making sense in any of the things he's seeing. Nothing leaps out as familiar. He sees something that would look like a pommel horse, except it's canted at an angle and has leather straps dangling from each end. He sees something that might look like a weight bench, except it has two horizontal surfaces, not level, and what looks like metal manacles attached to the uprights. He sees something that looks like it might belong in a dentist's office, except that the places on the chair where the arms and legs would go are articulated. It also has some kind of restraints attached to the wrists and ankles. He sees an enormous metal X canted slightly forward against one wall, actual chains dangling from the top posts. He sees a small, padded bench that only sits 2 or 3 inches off the floor, making it unlikely to be a footstool. He sees a corner area cleared of everything but a gym-style mat and a silver pole, but that also has a toilet and shower head, beneath which is a 6-inch drain. He sees a metal bar dangling from the ceiling by shiny silver chains, the area around it conspicuously empty. Most of an entire wall is made up of dangling things, which look, to Steve, like someone's laundry hung out to dry, until he stares at it long enough that the dangling things resolve into pieces of leather. Something like a razor strop, several widths of things that could be belts, something that certainly looks like a pony whip, several other things that might be other kinds of whips. There is one lone cabinet in the room, enormous enough to house Steve's entire wardrobe. It's the only thing that he can actually identify, and even then, in context with the rest of the room, he can't begin to guess what its purpose is. He turns, unsurprised to find Tony watching him intently. "I don't know what any of this is for," he says, meaning for it to be calm, hearing it come out unsteady. "I know," Tony says, his hand still resting warmly along Steve's lower back. "I didn't expect you to recognize anything, Never mind that. How do you feel about the room? Steve feels baffled, but Tony seems serious. So Steve turns away and scans the room again, trying to decide how he feels about it. His gaze hangs up on the restraints. They're everywhere. Almost every piece of equipment has them. He lets his gaze wander over everything again. Some things, he finds, he can sort of picture the use for. The not dentist chair. Someone could be tied to it, could be positioned for almost anything. The giant X? It almost looks like it could be made out of steel girders. It's so solid and enormous. It's almost certainly something someone would be chained to. He glances at the walls of belts and whips, and yes, that would be something to do to someone chained to a giant X. Terrified, Steve says, and looks at Tony, who has one brow arched thoughtfully. But curious, he admits. Is that curious as in, I wonder if Tony will tell me what these things are? Or is it more like intrigued? Like, I wonder if Tony is going to hook me up to some of that and teach me what I like? Tony asks intently. Steve swallows against the pressure in his chest, hesitating. But for someone that doesn't really know Steve that well, he always seems to know just how to say things. He glances back at the giant X, wonders what it would feel like to be stretched out against it. He wonders if he'll ever stop wondering now that he's considered the possibility. What is that thing? He asks, pointing. Tony follows his pointed finger, and then looks back at Steve, actually looking a little taken aback. That's what you're thinking about? He asks quietly, tone serious. Out of everything in this room, that's the thing you hang up on? Steve's face heats. I can't just go on calling it the giant X in my head, he says. It will drive me crazy. A ghost of a smile touches Tony's lips. That, Captain, is a St. Andrew's cross. I'm assuming you've deduced its purpose. Tony's voice is low and warm and tugs at the pit of Steve's belly. He realizes with real surprise that his cock is still fully erect. It hadn't wilted at all, in spite of Steve's confusion. Because of Tony, he suspects. Because his body just reacts like that to Tony's proximity. It's for whipping, Steve says, his voice a little rough. It is, Tony agrees. And for fucking, though probably not for you. Steve frowns. Why not for me? You're too tall, Tony says. Still low, but amused now, too. We'd have run into this problem before if our encounters hadn't all been on surfaces designed for my particular build. Steve looks at him, both amused and incredulous. Your desk is designed to be the right height for you to fuck someone on it? Tony smirks. Some would call it vanity. I call it planning ahead. He shifts the hand at the small of Steve's back so that it slips under his t-shirt. I'd like to take you inside and see if I can show you a good time, Steve, he says, eyes familiarly dark. But this room isn't going anyplace if you need some time to think about it. Steve looks back at the St. Andrew's cross. I won't put you on the cross tonight. If I'm going to be hitting you with anything, I want you freestanding, so there isn't any confusion about whether you like the bondage or whether you like the hitting. What if I don't like the hitting? Steve asks. It's a genuine concern. He's had pain of all shapes and sizes inflicted on him, and it's never been a good thing. Then I won't hit you, Tony says. There are still dozens of things to do in this room, if marking up your lovely skin isn't an option. Steve shivers a little, and Tony's hand slides up his back, palm pressing between Steve's shoulder blades. "The idea," he tries, and then sighs. He doesn't know how to explain how the idea makes him feel. "The idea takes you halfway there," Tony says, soothing now. "It's as much about what's in your head as it is about your actual body." "But right now I'm," Steve says. "Overwhelmed, I know," Tony says. "Come inside, I'll settle you down, and then we'll see how you feel."
"Settle me down?" Steve repeats uncertainly.
Tony's hand presses between his shoulder blades. "Believe it," he says. And Steve is already nodding, because he does. He doesn't know exactly how it will work, but he doesn't doubt Tony. Tony's hand on his back urges him gently forward, and Steve steps into the room. He throws a glance back over his shoulder, catching sight of the foot of the bed, and wonders if he should ask Tony to settle him down in that room instead.
"Don't second-guess me, Captain," Tony says, pressing Steve onward. "It will be better in here."
Steve thinks that it would be easier in the room with the bed, but he also guesses that easier might not be the same as better. He's overwhelmed at the sight of this room. It makes him feel like he's going to jump out of his skin, but a little time and familiarity will probably cure that. And Steve isn't a stranger to jumping in at the deep end. Tony leads him around the not a pummel horse and into a small open area with the 2-inch padded stool centered in it. "Kneel down," Tony says, one hand gesturing toward the stool.
"Oh," Steve thinks, and turns and sinks down to his knees on the stool, which is thickly enough padded to be fairly comfortable.
"You turn to face the cross," Tony says thoughtfully. Steve looks at the St. Andrew's cross, but isn't sure what to say about it, so doesn't say anything. "I've got something in my pocket for you," Tony says, circling around so that he's standing in front of Steve. "Your left. Get them out." Steve slips his fingers into the pockets of Tony's jeans and fishes out 2 oblong pieces of metal attached together by a length of chain. He would have taken a better look, but Tony says, "Just hold on to them for right now. Put your hands behind your back." Steve does, the metal clasped in his right hand, already warm from the heat of Tony's body. Tony takes a couple of steps back, and then begins to methodically strip, leaving his clothes and shoes in a pile. Steve watches, jumpiness nearly forgotten, as Tony walks back to him, his cock mostly hard, swaying thickly from the neat, dark thatch of his pubic hair. Steve is barely surprised when his mouth starts to water. Tony closes to within an inch of Steve, angling his pelvis so that his cock brushes against the edge of Steve's jaw. He fists the hand in Steve's hair and tugs so that Steve leans into his hip. Tony smells of sweaty skin, spice, and machine oil. The combination twists at the base of Steve's spine, and he can't stop himself from pressing an open-mouth kiss along the thin skin of Tony's hip bone. Tony hums softly, holding Steve in place without speaking for a minute or more, until even Steve can feel his shoulders relaxing. So easy to do with his face pressed against Tony's naked skin. He thinks that will be enough, that Tony will let go, that there is some kind of recreational plan in his very immediate future. But instead, Tony pulls slightly away and angles back in with his cock leading. Steve opens his mouth without thought, and Tony presses right in. Not hard, but firmly. And Steve leans into it, taking it deeper than Tony's thrust would have taken it. "Yes," Tony says simply, and Steve moans a little, prickling with familiar heat.
Tony's hand in his hair stops Steve from leaning very far forward. The tug of it, faintly painful, but immaterial combined with the hot width of Tony's cock in his mouth. Tony rocks forward, but not far, not anywhere near as far as Steve wants him to push in, just pulling gently back and then in again. No matter how much Steve uses his tongue or how hard he sucks, just a steady in and out. Until Steve stops straining forward and just lets Tony do whatever he wants. As soon as he does, Tony pulls all the way out, and Steve lets out a humiliating sound of disappointment. Tony pushes his fingers through Steve's hair and then slides down to his knees with easy agility. Steve blinks at Tony, blinks at being like this, so close and face to face. Tony is looking at him consideringly with his dark eyes. He hums again and cups Steve's chin in his hand. Steve moves as directed, and Tony is kissing him all of a sudden. Not like either of the times before, but with his mouth hot and open, his tongue darting unchallenged into Steve's mouth. Steve kisses back, or more truthfully, just cooperates with being kissed. With Tony's tongue sliding against his, and Tony's teeth dragging brightly across his lip. Steve groans and lets the force of Tony's mouth on his push him back a little, wishes he could touch Tony, arches his back when both of Tony's hands slide under his t-shirt and across his stomach to his chest. He gasps brokenly when Tony pulls away, cock aching, trapped in his jeans. Tony shifts so he has Steve's shirt in his hands and drags it up and over his head before Steve realizes he's being stripped. His shirt bunches at his wrists, and Steve intends to shake it free, but Tony is kissing him again, so he isn't thinking about anything else, just about the heat of Tony's mouth and the feel of one of Tony's hands slipping around to cup the back of his neck. And something in his belly uncoils, needy but calm. And he moans into Tony's mouth helplessly. Tony pulls back again, and Steve whispers, "Tony," pleadingly, his face heating, but desperate anyhow. Tony bites his bottom lip, deliberate and slow, until it hurts enough to wrest a cry from Steve. Tony licks at the bite. Steve can taste his own blood, kisses it, and then pulls back to regard Steve from 2 inches away again. Steve's cock is so painfully hard that he straightens a little on the bench, trying to relieve the pressure. Tony watches him do it, then reaches out and unbuttons Steve's fly, fingers as quick and agile as the rest of him. Steve's cock practically falls out into Tony's waiting palm, and Steve cries out again at the feel of Tony's fingers curling around him. Tony doesn't do any of the 10 things Steve wishes he would do to his cock. He just tugs Steve's jeans slightly down and tugs his balls free of the denim as well. Steve had elected to go without underwear. He thinks Tony looks a little pleased. Steve bites his lip when Tony pulls his hand back to keep from making the pleading noises he can feel tightening his throat. "How do you feel?" Tony asks softly. He puts his hands on Steve's shoulders and strokes firmly all the way down Steve's arms. "Calmer," Steve admits, and tries to think of something better. Because that's true, but not really accurate. He's too shiveringly aroused to be truly calm. "Not calm," he tries to correct. "But not..." He looks at Tony helplessly. "Less skittish," Tony suggests. "More easygoing?" Steve latches onto the last one, nodding. "Easygoing," he agrees. "Like, I can't worry very much about..." He gestures. "Everything." Tony smiles. "Good. You shouldn't be worried. I will explain exactly what I intend to do before I do it, until we know what works for you.
Except this one thing, Tony says, almost apologetically, and raises a hand.
The motion is widely telegraphed, and Steve recognizes it and even considers bracing himself. But in the end, his body won't let him take a blow that he sees coming. He catches Tony's wrist with his hand, still several inches from Steve's face, and holds it there.
I'm not sure that hitting me is a good idea, Steve says, truthfully, if a little reluctantly.
Tony doesn't look at all surprised, though he says,
That was fast.
He twists his wrist very slightly, and Steve releases it. After a moment, he puts his hand behind his back again. Tony is looking at his wrist.
That will probably bruise.
I'm sorry, Steve says unhappily.
Don't be, Tony says, giving him a long, steady look.
I knew the risks, and it's one of the things I need to know. I've topped military subs before. Your reflexes are something I have to take into consideration if I'm going to hit you.
I don't think it's a good idea, Steve says unsteadily.
I'm not sure I can just let you... He swallows.
I could have broken your wrist.
But you didn't. And trust me, I know how to find out if you're going to be able to let me. In my experience, soldiers either love the pain and crave it, or absolutely can't stand it.
Tony smiles faintly.
I know how to figure out which it is without scarring you for life.
Steve can see the St. Andrew's cross over Tony's shoulder. He struggles to phrase what he's thinking, and he finally manages.
But if there were bondage, I couldn't accidentally hurt you.
If there's a chance of you accidentally hurting me, then we're doing something that's wrong for you, Tony says soothingly.
He puts a hand on Steve's knee.
We might find out that being hit works better for you with the bondage because of the way it feels to your body and your mind. Or we might find out you like some pain as long as there's some pleasure to balance it. But before we do that, we need to know if you like pain play at all, Steve. Some people don't, and I'm not interested in doing anything you don't like.
I don't have any past positive... Steve stops talking, because he thinks he might have been about to tell Tony a lie. He doesn't have any positive associations with pain during combat. But before that? Once, he'd weighed 100 pounds dripping wet, and he'd gotten into fistfights that he had no hope of winning twice a week. He hadn't ever, or it hadn't been about that, but there had always been a defiant sort of satisfaction at the pain.
Tony is watching him shrewdly, but he doesn't actually ask about it. Instead, he says,
Let me do a couple of things and see how you feel about them, Captain. Do you remember your safe word?
Yes, Steve says slowly, his mind still sticking around the idea that he might have some kind of actual, if slightly warped, experience at this part. But it isn't the same kind of experience. This isn't a fight that Steve can't win. It's not a fight in which he doesn't have to worry about hurting anyone because he's too fragile to really do any damage.
Wait, he says, a little hopelessly.
You're rabbiting, Tony says. There's no disapproval in his voice, though it's flat and neutral. The expression on his face isn't any better. His gaze is distant.
No, Steve insists immediately, because Tony looking at him like that makes his stomach drop and his heart pound.
I'm not going anywhere, he adds, and Tony relaxes enough that his expression goes from nothing at all to faintly unhappy.
Steve doesn't like it, but it's still a little better than nothing.
You said, before, when you tried to slap me, you said you knew the risks.
He looks at Tony a little pleadingly, and Tony relaxes a little more.
I don't think we can do this, because...
He swallows.
Because you don't know the risks. You don't know things about me.
Tony's face opens a little in surprise.
But you're going to tell me?
He asks.
You're not going to shoot me down and then fuck off into the sunset?
I would never do that, Steve says carefully. But I'm not sure how to explain. Tony's shoulders have loosened again, though he's still looking at Steve like he can't quite believe he's real.
You're really going to do this, he says, amazed.
Steve says, I would never just fuck off into the sunset, hoping that his sincerity is clear in his voice. But I have to tell you something, and if it's something that upsets you, I'll understand if you don't want to do this anymore.
I can't think of anything in the world that would make me not want to do this anymore, Tony says, and his sincerity is unquestionable.
Steve is a little relieved, even though he knows he can't hold Tony to that answer. Not when Tony doesn't really know what he's committing to. He can feel his cock wilting, and there doesn't seem to be any good way to even lead into the secrets he's about to lay out. He opens his mouth, hoping that something that makes sense will come out, and Tony reaches out and grabs Steve's cock at the same time. So Steve merely says,
Ah!
I still have plans for this, Tony says, voice soft, but brooking no arguments as he strokes Steve fully erect again, until Steve is gasping and rocking his hips into Tony's hand. Tony's hand stills when Steve is again aching with need, but he doesn't remove it from Steve's cock.
Just say it, Tony orders quietly, and it almost makes it easy.
I'm Captain America, Steve says, and shudders out of breath. I was part of a military experiment to create super soldiers for America during World War II. I know who Captain America is. The words are almost clinical, but Tony's voice is warm. Steve can feel it settling over him like a blanket, and he still feels uncertain and shaky, but he's also relieved.
What do you need to know so that you believe me? He asks.
I already believe you, Tony says matter-of-factly. When I decided to slap you, I really did know the risks, Captain. Steve considers that for a long moment, and can only think to ask, How did you know?
You didn't even change your name, Tony says. Even if I hadn't ever seen your face, I wouldn't have let the coincidence of that go without investigating it.
You knew the first time, Steve says, and isn't sure how he feels about it.
No, Tony says. I thought it was a coincidence and an uncanny resemblance that I couldn't possibly resist. But I'm a clever man. That's why I have an enormous pile of money and a supercomputer capable of hacking anything S.H.I.E.L.D. can even imagine. I thought it was unlikely, but I checked anyway, because little details like that niggle at me.
He gives Steve a brief smirk. If I had known, I definitely wouldn't have propositioned you.
He cocks his head.
Well, maybe. About 50% chance, really. Hard to juggle between national icon and teenage jerk-off fantasies. Plus, you looked spectacular in the uniform. And, speaking of uniforms, do you still have the Captain America uniform?
Steve blinks a little.
That's the only question?
I read everything there was to find out about your recovery. The mission reports were pretty comprehensive. I think that long in the ice would have done a number on the uniform.
He sounds disappointed.
The urge to laugh is turning over gently in Steve's belly.
I thought you'd be mad, he says, and Tony arches both brows at him in mock surprise.
You thought I'd be mad that you didn't reveal your super-secret, ultra-classified, back-from-the-dead superhero identity until our third date?
Tony's voice is equal parts gentle and mocking, something Steve isn't sure other humans are genetically capable of exhibiting. It's incredibly reassuring.
It sounds stupid when you say it like that, Steve says, with an uncertain chuckle.
Tony gives him eyebrows again, but kindly doesn't expound on how stupid it sounds.
Uniform? He asks again instead.
Steve's chuckle is sturdier this time.
Not the original. There's a new one, but it's kind of snug.
Tony looks pleased to hear it.
You should bring it. Peeling it off you, inch by inch, would be the realization of dozens of hormone-fueled dreams of my youth.
He looks amused, but sounds perfectly serious.
Shield has it, Steve says.
At Tony's very slight expression of disappointment, Steve immediately hears himself saying,
I'll get it. It should be with the shield anyway. It's stupid to have them in separate places.
Completely stupid, Tony agrees, looking extremely satisfied with himself.
I'll look forward to seeing them both. In the meantime,
he tugs gently on Steve's cock.
I knew the risks when I tried to hit you, and they are almost non-existent. You are never going to hurt me unless I specifically ask to be hurt.
Never on purpose, Steve says, and then pauses.
What do you mean, ask to be hurt?
I mean, people are rarely unidirectional, Tony says seriously. For example, does the fact that I put my cock in your ass and you love it mean that you wouldn't like to put your cock in mine?
Steve's brain stutters a little at the idea, and he shakes his head, mouth dry.
Ergo, I enjoy hitting other people if they enjoy it as well. And occasionally, I like to be hit.
Steve isn't sure he'll ever be able to respond to that in any way that makes sense. It makes his palm sweat and his cock jump at the same time.
People are rarely exclusively one or the other, Tony continues. There's usually some bleed. I think you're going to find out you have a pretty extraordinary pain kink, if you ever let me continue demonstrating.
Why do you think that? Steve asks. He genuinely feels like he needs to know. Otherwise, it all seems too overwhelming.
Tony gives him a faintly impatient look, but answers willingly enough.
Because I have experience with people with pain kinks, myself included, and I know what kind of behaviors generally go along with that. Because you're a beautifully responsive submissive, and some submissives take pleasure in the pleasure that their dominants take in inflicting pain. Because I know your response to pleasure, and they're pretty extraordinary, and the two things sometimes conflate into something called sensation play, which means most, or all, stimuli is physically and mentally satisfying. Because of your knee-jerk reaction to the St. Andrew's cross. And just because I think so, because I get a vibe from you, a hunch, and statistically, my hunches regarding you have been fairly accurate.
I'm still afraid I might hurt you by accident, Steve admits.
Go with me on this tiny little test run, and if it's successful, I'll put you on the cross, Tony says.
I can probably lift the cross, Steve says, but his cock is jerking in Tony's fist.
But not accidentally, Tony says. Even you would have to put some effort into it, which means the possibility of you reflexively hurting me is vanishingly small. You really want to hurt me a lot, Steve says, his voice unsteady.
Tony leans into him so far that the head of Steve's cock brushes his thigh, and Tony's breath is warm against his jaw.
Steve, he murmurs, low and hot. I want to hurt you so much that you're killing me right now. If you never want to do it again, there are hundreds of things I will still want to do to you and with you. You liking pain is not necessary for me liking you. But I have literally spent my entire adult life wanting to lay down intricate patterns of welts across your stunningly perfect back and your unbelievably gorgeous ass. All I want is for you to let me experiment with you, just enough so that we know whether or not to try.
Steve tips his head forward to rest it against Tony's shoulder. Tony cups the back of his neck when he does, and Steve's whole body feels like it loosens.
I'm afraid I'll like it, he confesses.
What makes that something to be afraid of? Tony asks. Steve pauses, working at the idea like a knot, trying to see the shape in it.
That I won't be able to tell the difference, he says finally. That it'll make me careless.
There is a distinct difference in opening yourself up to pain in a controlled environment and having it inflicted on you against your will. If you like it, you'll know the difference immediately. Believe me, I'm Iron Man. I have experience with both kinds of pain. They aren't the same at all.
Tony presses a kiss to Steve's jaw, and Steve shivers into it.
Steve thinks of all the fights. He thinks of the way that the St. Andrew's cross gleams and fascinates him. He thinks about Tony's face when he gets what he wants, and how making that happen feels like dying happy to Steve.
Okay, Steve murmurs. Tell me what to do.
Tony shudders a little against Steve, and then leans away, releasing his cock.
Give me what you're holding, he says, holding out a hand, palm up.
Steve drops the chain and metal oblongs into Tony's hand. Tony pulls them apart, stretching the chain, and then holds them up and turns them a little. He presses on one end, and the other end opens like tiny square jaws.
They're nipple clamps, Tony tells Steve. Normally I'd warm you up for them, bite and pinch your nipples until they're sensitive. But we're going to do this in baby steps until we have more information. Are your nipples usually sensitive?
Steve, who has never paid much attention to his nipples, aside from noting that he has them, shakes his head.
I have no idea.
Tony tumbles the nipple clamps into one hand and sweeps the thumb of his other hand across one of Steve's nipples. Steve's breath hitches slightly at the soft buzz of sensation, and Tony does the same to the other. His touch leaves his nipples feeling slightly cool, and Steve feels them tightening and looks down at his chest to watch. Tony pinches one lightly and gives it a tiny twist. Nothing that hurts at all. But Steve definitely feels it. Tony repeats the motion with the other. Steve's balls tighten a little, and he breathes out a long breath.
I'm going to go with sensitive, Tony murmurs,
and Steve is faintly disappointed when he pulls his hand away. Steve watches Tony pull the chain apart, and this time, the sight of the clamps causes a little tug in the pit of Steve's belly. He can imagine what they'll look like on him as well, which deepens the tug into a gentle throb. He watches Tony's hand, mesmerized, as Tony pinches them open and settles them against Steve's chest, each of Steve's nipples framed by tiny metal and rubber jaws. When Tony lets go, there is a sharp twist of pain that makes Steve arch in surprise.
but then it passes, and his nipples just feel warm and a little strange. Just pressure and the awareness of sensation. Steve stares at them and at the chain strung between them, and his face flames unexpectedly. He had thought maybe he was getting over that, but apparently not. They look decorative or something. Something that makes him want a shirt so that no one can see. He looks at Tony looking with dark-eyed pleasure, and he shudders a little, his shoulders hunching. Tony presses one of them back almost absently, and Steve straightens obediently before he even notices he's doing it. Then his hot face gets hotter, and he has to fight not to turn his face away. Tony looks up from the clamps, his expression tight with satisfaction. "Hurt?" he asks, but casually, like he already knows Steve's answer. "Not quite. Warm," Steve admits. Tony reaches out a hand and twists Steve's left nipple, clamp and all. And Steve bites out a surprised sound of pain. Though it doesn't actually hurt. Not quite. He's not sure how it feels. He's prepared when Tony does the same to his right nipple, and doesn't make a sound. But the zing of pain, pressure, almost pleasure, is enough to make him shake a little. "Good?" Tony asks, and smiles when Steve nods cautiously. He picks the chain off of Steve's chest and pulls it upward. "Open," he says, and Steve opens his mouth, puzzled. Tony tugs the chain up. Steve is jolted again by that indefinable sensation and slips it into his mouth. "Hold it," Tony says, and Steve closes his mouth, teeth biting down on the chain to keep it secure. The tug against his nipples is continuous now, something that is prickling and unfamiliar, but feels good in what seems to be exactly equal measure. Tony tugs lightly at each clamp, as though to check that they're secure, and then slips backward and gets to his feet. Steve watches, tipping his head back a little, pulls at his nipples, but it still doesn't precisely hurt, so he ignores it as well as he can. As Tony crosses the room to the wall of belts and whips. Steve is so thoroughly distracted by Tony's ass, and the idea that Tony is probably going to let him press his cock into that ass at some point, that he doesn't actually see what Tony gets until he turns around again and walks back to Steve. It looks like a riding crop. Steve blinks, and then Tony is close enough for Steve to be sure it is, in fact, a riding crop. He tenses helplessly, but Tony doesn't make any move to hit him with it. In fact, once Tony seems sure that Steve has gotten a good look, Tony slides back onto his knees and holds the crop out to Steve, broadside. "Both hands," Tony says, when Steve reaches for it. Steve brings his other hand forward as well and takes the crop. He just holds it for a few seconds, and then Tony tugs the crop down to rest across Steve's knees. "Keep your hands on it. Don't let go for any reason." Tony gives him a piercing look, and Steve nods his understanding. The crop is taut and rough in his hands, thicker than Steve would have pictured it. He's wondering what it would feel like to be hit with it when Tony bends forward and mouths Steve's right nipple, unexpectedly hot and wet. And Steve jerks a little in surprise, and then the sensation hits him, the way Tony's tongue flicks at the clamp and then laps at the exposed tip of his nipple. Steve groans through his teeth, his cock throbbing dully. Tony turns his attention to Steve's other nipple, and this time Steve jerks hard enough that it pulls the chain in his mouth, and both nipples flare with brief, bright pain, even as Tony's hot tongue drags against Steve's skin. He exhales roughly feeling a little unsteady on the low bench. He can't shift his stance any wider. His jeans are holding him in place. And Tony distracts him by dipping down to tongue the head of his cock. Steve carefully holds himself still, but it doesn't seem to matter. His hips are prickling, and his cock is so ready that he thinks for a few seconds that he's going to go off. Tony sits up before that can happen, and Steve relaxes slightly. "Close your eyes," Tony murmurs. "You've already made a puddle on the floor, and this is probably going to be over quickly. Close your eyes and trust me, Captain." Steve looks at Tony for a long moment, nerves tight in his belly, and then tips his head a little to drag at the nipple clamps, just letting himself feel how they feel on him. He still can't decide whether it's pleasure or pain, but it's bright and wide and good, and he's already been trusting Tony all this time.